this is a brand new day.
Certainly is a brand new day. It's the Roundtable, a 9:14 on a Thursday morning, first day of summer, and it's the Roundtable panel. And joining us today, we have Judy Patrick, who is the Vice President for Editorial Development at New York Press Association, College of St. Rose Journalism Professor Kaylin Brown, Chairman of Capital District Latinos Dan Arizari, and counterterrorism expert and author Malcolm Nance. We welcome your comments as we roll along with the conversation today. It's panel at WAMC.org. Try to keep the letters brief if you can. No links. We don't click them. No abbreviations. Try to send one a day. We get a lot of mail. So panel at WAMC.org. First, Malcolm Nance, when is the book Plot to Destroy Democracy out?
The Plot to Destroy Democracy is being launched this Tuesday. I'll be in New York City. And if you really want to watch what we don't talk about today, I'll be saying on Chris Hayes next Monday down at my home at MSNBC.
But I thought this was your home.
My home's in Hudson, that's true.
All right, fair.
AMC is my radio home.
Yes, all right.
And my daily television home.
All right, well played. And so the book is out Tuesday. When's the film out?
Well, you know, the funny thing is the rights to plot, the plot to hack America were bought.
Really?
For a 10-part miniseries. So that's, you know, the book which I wrote 2 months before the election, spelling out everything that has been happening to you for the last 2 years. So Plot to Destroy Democracy is far more insidious, and I think you're going to live through it before it comes out in film.
Wow. Dan Arizari, you had a big event last month.
We did. We had the opening of our Cultural Empowerment and Community Engagement Center just a couple of blocks away from here. A lot of good music, a lot of good food, a lot of mentioning about the ongoing situation in Puerto Rico. And thank you for asking.
It was well attended?
It was about 200 people. We had an art exhibition. Everything was themed around the hurricane. And we had the most spectacular group of Puerto Rican artists, actors, who came and presented the play Ay Maria, which was really taken around the entire island, all of the municipalities, 78 municipalities in Puerto Rico. And it was really kind of a feedback of what they were experiencing as they took the play around to all these municipalities in the wake of the storm.
Well, you set the bar pretty high this time. Now you have to already start planning for next
year. I know. Maybe we could get Malcolm to come over after he's done with the Linda.
Then he'll be driving a Ferrari. I mean, with all the film rights.
Are you kidding?
Judy Patrick and Kaylin Brown, you just got done with the media project. Mm. How was it?
It was lovely, but Alan Chartok was not there.
He is not here today, although we may hear from him at some point. He may call in. He's at an event.
It was a different experience without Alan Chartok.
Mm. Should I to elaborate on that?
Yeah. Shall we leave that one alone? Hey, I wonder, before we start the real meat of the show, did you on the Media Project talk about the ABC News issue and how they had to apologize?
We did not talk. The Paul Manafort mistake.
Yeah.
Did
you see that?
No, we did not talk.
Yeah. So if you missed it, they're apologizing for a graphic. And I'm wondering how this works. Maybe Malcolm, who does a lot of TV, will know. Is it an intern who does the crawls? Basically, ABC News is apologizing for a graphic that incorrectly said that former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort had pleaded guilty to 5 charges of manslaughter. The graphic aired Wednesday during live coverage of President Trump's meeting with congressional leaders, where it was announced he would sign the executive order, and we'll talk about the executive order he signed yesterday. Yeah. So what happened there?
It isn't interns. It's the production booth. It's a production team. And they do test chyrons, and someone may have been just doing a joking chyron, and it actually got the keystroke, brought it up on the screen. But, you know, go ahead, give your apology, but believe me, what Fox News will do to this is going to be insane, I'm sure.
Well, President Trump already tweeted. Yeah. Mm. He said, look at what fake ABC News put out. I guess they had it prepared from the 13 angry Democrats leading the witch hunt. So,
but those of us who have worked in newsrooms for a long time, we've seen this. You see people joking around and inserting narrative into a story, thinking that an editor will catch it, and then it's not caught, and this happens. So this happens occasionally in the news industry, but people need to not joke around with any content that might end up where it shouldn't be.
Yeah, but you have the president of the United States grabs on it and comes out with a flat-out lie and pushes this horrible, horrible narrative that shows the pathology of it. That any mistake by anyone in media, you're going to get it. All right. And it will, they will use it to, you know, hammer democracy over the head.
I guess, Judy, it's a little tougher to do in the newspaper world.
No, it does happen. And it, these clear mistakes happen, used to happen a lot. And then you, but and a lot of the protections in place to prevent it from happening are gone because newsrooms in, around the country are shrinking because the business is down.
Does somebody get fired for that, Malcolm?
Oh, I'm sure somebody will probably be fired for that, only because you had Donald Trump come back and tweet about it.
Well, that's not bad for business, however. If you're an ABC executive, that's not so terrible for
ABC's
business.
ABC's not one of the big ones. It's not like CNN and MSNBC. They're national news, and they go by old school standards, I think.
I think what's important to note here is that it's an assault on journalism again,
yes,
because it's just an excuse to batter journalism. And today, I'm feeling really good about the journalistic community, ladies present. You know, the fact that they were able to ferret out the story on immigration and what was happening is just wonderful. It inspires hope.
Well, thank you for providing the continuity, Dan.
Always.
Hours after reversing himself to end the forced separations of migrant families, President Trump addressed a raucous rally in Duluth, Minnesota, to defend his hardline immigration policies. Trump made only brief mention of his decision to sign the executive order after spending days insisting that his administration had no choice but to separate families apprehended at the border because of federal law and a court decision. He said, quote, "We're going to keep families together and the border is going to be just as tough as it's been," adding that he didn't like the sight or feeling of children separated from their parents. President Trump abruptly reversed himself yesterday, signed that executive order, halting the policy. Apparently the Trump family had something to do with this. Who wants first on this?
Me.
Okay.
All right.
So the reason that he has sight of these families being separated is because of the accurate journalism that's
absolutely
delivering images and text describing specifically in one-on-one interviews with families that are being ruptured what has happened. So any knowledge that he possesses came because of the news industry.
But what took so long? I mean, days. Every day, hundreds of children were being ripped from their mother's arms. What took so long? In this situation, every day counted.
Months, actually. It's almost, I believe we're going on week number 7 when this policy was implicated with a very, very strong, hard hand along the border. And that information had been getting out. You know, those local, you know, city papers and things along the border, they were well aware of this going on by the time it had filtered up to national media. Other than, I mean, the only way people could understand it was the phrase kiddie concentration camp, baby concentration camps, were the only way that this got propelled into the national media. And lo and behold, with really, really brilliant journalism, you find out all of it was true. It's even worse than we think, because now we're finding these children were being nationally dispersed throughout all this time. You have airlines are now fighting back. The White House and ICE, the spokesman for Department of Homeland Security, attacked American Airlines yesterday and said that they are, you know, essentially disloyal to the families and work of the law enforcement officers there. We have gotten to the point because of this story with the president of the United States out of control, implementing essentially a blatantly racist and heartless and cruel policy in which he literally ordered people to take children away from them with no concern about what happens afterwards. And as someone who spent his entire life fighting wars overseas and trying to do it right, to turn around and see this happening in my country is an utter disgrace.
Dan.
I just can't get over how this administration is dehumanizing on a daily basis a group of people. Mm. And of course, it's close to home because I, as a Latino, even though I'm Puerto Rican, I'm supposed to have all the rights of citizenship. I say that because my countrymen still don't have that on the island. But this is the way that you tear apart families. Mm. And it's not unlike what they did during slavery. And it's part of a campaign to demoralize people and to make them so scared of coming here. But what they're not taking into account is what these people are fleeing from, okay? And Malcolm probably knows better than any of us that we, as a country, destabilize these countries in Central and South America. Mm. And we're paying the price for a lot of that destabilization, because those regimes and those puppet dictatorships that we supported for so many years through things like the School of the Americas and all the things that were going on, the shenanigans there, those regimes have been toppled or are under threat from narco cartels, and those people are fleeing the violence from those countries. The immigration wave we're seeing is a direct result of that, those policies.
Absolutely. If I could just make one quick point. Trump at his rally said that he will start eliminating support and grants and government aid to nations in Central America whose citizens are coming to this country. This is I was an intelligence warfighter, right? My job was to go out ahead of our military forces, collect covert and overt intelligence, process it back so we don't make stupid decisions. Mm. This is as stupid as they come. Mm-hmm. We need to be creating aid structures, law enforcement, relationships down there where we make it so that gangs and drug lords don't rule these nations. When they collapse, this will be a tidal wave coming to the United States. And Trump's iron hand, which is, you know, essentially building the iron wall, right, in between the United States and Latin America. We literally have foreign human rights bodies equating us to the communists of the old.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't this just a tactic, really, to get that wall built in time for the 2020
No,
election?
I think he's a hardcore racist. I think the wall's just a
And classist. I wanted to add that to your list. I think he's a classist, because I absolutely think that anyone who is less than him or is not in the circle of very rich and famous people, like the Kardashians who get an audience with the president, what is that? I mean, this is... It's based on a circle that includes very few. That excludes the majority.
Right.
The office exists to help the majority. That's why it's there. The majority of humans, too, might I add.
Right.
All of us.
You know, my book, Plot to Destroy Democracy, has that exact point. He works for not the United States. He works for the global oligarchy. And right now, in 2013, he met with the top 12 oligarchs of Russia at the Nobu restaurant, and that's when he kicked off his election bid. And he thinks like them. These people who, you know, stay at his hotels, have $100 million yachts, you know, spend billions of dollars, that's where his mindset is. And the 37% that are supporting him are the stool that he is stepping up on. He does not care about American democracy. And all of this is a pretty good example of how every other president in the history of this nation would never have tolerated or allowed anyone in their administration to even mention a policy like this.
I'd like to defer to the ladies on our panel. How do people feel, women feel, and I know you can't speak for all women, but how do they feel about the machismo aspect of this presidency? Mm-hmm. Because this is a machista... type of rule that we're under, and it's very close to what happened in Latin America under various regimes, because you had the bully that was in charge. And I'm just, the way that he talks about women, obviously we've talked about that a lot, but I mean, this is, you know, a constant barrage against anybody who seems weak. And of course, in his mind, women fit that that description.
Okay,
well.
2 minutes until break, have at it.
So I think if more women were in power, you wouldn't see this happen. Were there any women in the room when this was being discussed? No. I think this reflects.
What was discussed?
Well, when it was discussed, let's have the zero tolerance policy. Let's not even think about what the impact on the families might be.
Well, Homeland Security Secretary Nielsen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
No, the women who were in that White House, they are hardcore sycophants, and they will go along with whatever.
So grassroots efforts are being made even here in the capital city by political action committees. Like Capital Women was formed specifically for that effort to raise up women in political office to fight back against the patriarchy. I mean, that's not the main reason. It's to represent the people. But those political action committees, which are often criticized, there are some that are trying to move women forward. And if we get more women in elected positions, that will likely, hopefully, change the conversation.
If you want to see Donald Trump's position on what he thinks of women who are intelligent, educated, and competent, look at the way he treats Angela Merkel of Germany. I mean, he treats her with utter contempt. Last week, he started making statements essentially supporting the right-wing, hardcore, Moscow-backed AfD conservatives. And it was all but said, overthrow the German government.
That misogyny will have its comeuppance. It's happening. It just isn't immediate. I believe that there will be a turnaround. It's just going to take time, and people are working hard as fast as they can.
I don't think we have much time.
I know.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org if you would like to share your thoughts with us. panel@wamc.org. Great panel today. We have Judy Patrick, Kaylin Brown, Dan Irizarry, and Malcolm Nance. And we will share some of your letters coming up. We'll break for news.
You can burn my body black, just don't make me go back to Jackson Square.
That's Mason Jennings will be at Helsinki Hudson on Friday night. And we didn't have BBC. Something happened with the satellite, or the BBC decided
to take a break.
So we don't know what's going on with the World Cup.
Trade wars.
Until you release the kids, there's no BBC.
By the way, is anybody following the World Cup?
Is that still
a little bit?
Yeah.
Yes.
You're a fan of the football?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Football? In the family.
How about you, Dan? You follow that?
I honestly don't. When my kids were playing soccer, I refused to go to the meets.
Good for
it's
you.
Very boring.
What? No, were you just too boring?
I didn't go. Yeah. I just didn't go as often as my wife would have liked.
I like American football. Mm. Yeah, good old American football.
Yes.
And
Are you ready? For some football?
Well, yeah. We're still. I'm a Mets fan, so baseball season's already over. Actually. Yeah,
I'm
at the blood
that.
Sports. I'm watching politics these days.
Yeah, you really are. What a panel we have. Malcolm Nance is here. Kaylin Brown, Judy Patrick, Dan Irizarry. The email address is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. While Donald Trump made his decision to sign the executive order, we still have another branch of government, and the House is working on a sweeping immigration overhaul. It's on the brink of collapse, as I understand it. There will be two votes today. I think President Trump's sudden decision yesterday sort of changed the equation, I think. House GOP leaders are still pulling out all the stops to bring reluctant Republicans on board in hopes of resolving broader immigration issues ahead of the November midterm election. Just the outcome remains somewhat uncertain. Malcolm.
Well, you know, can I make this local? Because tomorrow I'm going to have coffee at Cafe Rev in Hudson with Pat Ryan, who's one of the guys who's running to defeat Faso, who was one of the Republicans standing and giving a standing ovation to Donald Trump the other day, who says he doesn't like watching children being separated from their parents, but supports building the wall and all the other things that the House Republican Caucus wants. Okay, that is in my backyard. Okay, I'm from Stockport, Hudson, New York, a few miles from his house in Kinderhook, and I've got a guy up here who is supporting all of this. If he will do that, no one in the South and the West is going to support immigration reform. It's just a sham. And this whole thing of blaming the Democrats for all of this, we don't control the government. Democrats don't control the government, the House, the Senate, presidency, and barely have any input on the judiciary. So for the most part, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Donald Trump has put the shiv into any immigration reform, and I'm sure Dan has some interesting points on that.
Well, I just, you know, do you have the equivalent of a yawning emoji and like an audible yawning?
No, you know, shrugging like, your shoulders.
It's pretty much how I go through the day.
Right, exactly. So that's what I would actually send to you or to all the listeners. This is just, it's just a charade or a charade, depending on where you come from. It's just ridiculous. You know, but I want to throw a big heaping bunch of wood onto this fire because I'm not happy with Barack Obama's legacy on immigration because I think that there was a missed opportunity when he was elected. There was a lot of momentum behind immigration reform, and because that did not happen, and by the way, Trump is just carrying on a lot of the same immigration policies. I'm not talking about family separation, but deportations. Talk to some immigrant activists, and they will tell you that things were pretty horrible under Barack Obama. So, you know, he set the table in that regard, and I voted for Obama twice, and I would have voted for him probably a third time. But I'm telling you, I'm as a person who's concerned about these issues, and who sees the result on a daily basis. I'm not happy with the fact that Democrats did not take advantage of that opportunity.
And so my take would be that we need to move away from the blame narrative and focus more on solutions. And it does happen to some degree at the local level. Interestingly, just by coincidence, I was also dining yesterday with a group of people working on local Albany issues and trying to help our immigrants and refugees right in the city of Albany and surrounding areas. And last night at the Woman's Club in Albany, there was a poetry reading completed by immigrants and refugees who are serviced by RISE, which is an excellent organization in Albany. And so people are trying to still assist the immigrants and refugees who are here. That doesn't solve the problem of continuing to remain open-armed to, you know, attract more people and to help people who are moving in this direction. But I think we need to work more on solutions now. I think part of the problem is all the finger-pointing that's going on at the federal government.
You know, what I'm worried about today is what's going to happen next. This executive order very well may be legally challenged, and it's not going to go anywhere. And what happens to those children in the meantime?
Well, that's an interesting question, because this apparently really doesn't do anything for the 2,300 children who have already been taken from families. So, and it doesn't end the zero tolerance policy. So I'm not sure exactly what it did.
Well, I can tell you what it did. It gave Donald Trump an ability to reverse himself 180 degrees. And believe me, I know a lot of people, when they listen to me on the radio, they're like, this guy hates Trump. No, I hate incompetence, okay? I hate people who are just, you know, self-puffed up boofs. I mean, I worked overseas in intelligence for 30-some-odd years. I know a fake when I see one. And what I see here is a policy was deliberately crafted. And say what you will about the Obama administration, but, you know, I didn't have as much problem with the von Hindenburg administration as I did the Hitler administration when it followed off. Okay. So, you know, von Hindenburg's policies, we can argue them, but he did not involve the invasion of Europe. Same thing here, okay? What we're seeing here is literally the dismantlement of the immigration process that is existent since the founding of America, which was full of immigrants, right? They literally want to get rid of diversity visa. He said it himself in his speech yesterday, and it alarms me, okay, as someone who takes the honor of this nation seriously, when he says only the best people, we want a merit-based system. What he's saying is that he wants select people from Western and Eastern Europe who are not brown. He doesn't want anyone from Africa. He doesn't want anyone from the Middle East. He doesn't want anyone from Latin America. My intelligence stomping grounds, where I have to deal with people who are truly trying to hurt us, and then I get people out there who say, hey, listen, your country's just, you know, being run by essentially a racist regime. You expect us to help you with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and ISIS? And what do I say? Because this nation's values are under attack today. It is not about kids. Kids are now the hammer that he has used to impact what we are. And he expects the nation's soul to tear in and become what he wants it to be.
I think we are greater than that, and I don't think it's going to happen. I think that people are continuing to rise up, not my words, but excellent words nonetheless, and just keep fighting back. So I think that's happening.
Yeah, what happened to America being the land of opportunity, where you can come with nothing and make yourself great? That was what it used to be.
Well, that was all right when people's skin color was different. I hate to be that cynical, but I think that's what we're seeing. And when you start calling the immigration wave that we're seeing an infestation.
A Nazi term.
That's a Nazi term. That's vermin. That's what they call
that
the Jews.
That term was extraordinarily disturbing and unacceptable in any count, without any human.
Everyone must denounce that type of language.
We literally have a Godzilla-sized statue in New York Harbor that says, give me your...
Godzilla was bigger.
We
could use Godzilla right now to help us to protect people.
I thought I'd put it on populist terms that Trump voters can understand. We have this giant statue in New York City Harbor, which was erected because this nation, everyone who came here, except for Native Americans and African Americans, because we were hostages, are all immigrants to this nation. And to say we are stopping immigration into this nation, which was the shining beacon on the hill, as Ronald Reagan said it, is an anathema. And everyone, it has to do more than rise up and feel bad about this. The time has come to take action, and that means you're going to have to vote this year like it's an election year.
We have a great panel today. We have Malcolm Nance, Judy Patrick, Kaylin Brown, and Dan Irizarry. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And a couple of letters here, and then we'll take a quick break. This one is from Robin. For weeks, the administration perpetrated an atrocity no one could abide. Now comes an order rescinding the worst element of the atrocity while ratcheting up every other aspect of immigration protocol. So in the end, we've gone from the old policies to far more draconian ones with an interlude of sheer cruelty, and they get to spin this as a concession to the left.
You know, I'm hating the phrase left and right. Again, I served with people throughout my entire career. I never asked their politics, although I was told when I joined the military, you're a Republican because all the military guys are Republican. And I was Republican my entire career, most of my life.
I have to go now.
You know?
I'm joking.
I was a Colin Powell Republican. I'm just national security hard. Even he's no longer allowed in the party. But it is not a right or left issue. It is an America issue. It is an issue of national honor.
It's a human being.
It's about humanity.
We
it's
have
about,
to love each other.
Would you let your child do any of this? Your husband, your wife, do any of this?
No, they'd be grounded. This one is from Alan. Not our Alan. A different Alan. While we are outraged over social affronts, the House proposed a 2019 budget with major cuts to Medicare, etc. Conspiracy theory says this is by design. Can it be true?
Is it true?
Can it be true, says Alan, not our Alan. Is it all a big plot?
Well, there's a plot.
Is it a plot to destroy democracy, as one person once wrote?
Well, the plot to destroy democracy is really about getting rid of the fundamental tenets of American representative republicanism and going over to autocracy, which is where this president is leaning towards in the model of Russia, in the model of North Korea. But getting rid of Social Security and Medicare, big cuts, I don't think that's a plot. They've been saying that for years.
Yeah, that's been the Republican agenda for decades.
Since the 1930s?
At least, right.
To vaporize safety nets.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Everybody's got to work
and yet
because they're all lazy.
And yet there have been times when Republicans have been in charge of most branches of government, and it hasn't happened.
Yeah. Well, don't you think that the table's been set for such action now? Because we seem to have an autocratic president in place that gets everything he wants from his party because he's taken it over.
Let's take a quick break here. It is 9:44 Thursday morning. The roundtable panel is in full operation, and we welcome your thoughts. Panel@wamc.org. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Today we have Judy Patrick. Not Jody. Jody couldn't be here. Judy Patrick is here. Kaylin Brown, Dan Irizarry, Malcolm Nance. We'll be back.
True to yourself, to the bitter end.
That's Mason Jennings performing at Helsinki Hudson Friday night. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, the Roundtable panel, 9:46 on a Thursday morning, first day of summer. Gosh, it's beautiful. Mm. Just tell yourself today it's going to be a good day, even if it's a lie. Just tell yourself that.
Turn off CNN. You'll have a better day.
We have a panel today. Boy, what a panel. Judy Patrick is here, Kaylin Brown, Dan Irizarry, and Malcolm Nance. And you can join the fun by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. China on Thursday accused the United States of using bullying tactics and blackmail in threatening to impose tariffs on hundreds of billions of dollars of Chinese imports, ramping up criticism that the measures levied in the name of balancing trade would harm both countries' companies and the world economy. President Trump has ordered 25% tariffs on $50 billion in Chinese goods in response to Beijing's forced transfer of U.S. technology and alleged intellectual property theft, and he threatened to impose duties on $400 billion more in Chinese products. Trump's order, which is set to take effect July 6th, quickly matched by Beijing on U.S. goods exported to China. Meanwhile, U.S., Europeans, other governments have repeatedly complained that their firms operating in China are being compelled to surrender technology as part of Beijing's bid to create world-leading companies. North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un just got back from China. I don't know if anybody watched CNN last night. Bill Richardson was on. He was a U.S. Energy Secretary. I think he was ambassador to North Korea a couple of times. Yeah. And he said, quote, "I think China is sending a message to Trump. You want to put trade tariffs on us and have our cooperation on North Korea? You can't have both."
the missiles be flying soon again after that fake summit?
No, it was and it was a fake war threat last year as well. The same thing with the summit. What we have here, China has a trump card, and that trump card is very simple. They could expose any communications between the Trump organization and family and Chinese businesses and the amount of monies that they can get. China knows that they're going to, you know, this tit-for-tat trade war, this small, you know, things with tariffs, which Trump is, I believe he's threatening $560 billion.
Something like that.
At least, $500 trillion now.
At least $450 billion that I can see.
Yeah. You know, if we had a treaty and a body in which we had all of the countries of the Pacific Rim working with us with fixed
what a great idea.
Stop this. I don't know. Let's call it the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we have now turned completely over to China. This couldn't have happened. We would have been winning from the beginning. But Donald Trump doesn't understand the slightest thing about trade, economics, or making money, as we're going to find out when his tax returns get opened.
When it comes to our country, though, right? When it comes to him, as you mentioned, Malcolm, what he's doing is protecting his own self-interest, which has been the protocol throughout his administration. Yeah. So were he protecting the people in this country, perhaps, we would have different decisions being made on our behalves.
And it sounds really good on the campaign trail, even though it actually isn't very good for the farmers who are taking these cuts in their rates, and the steel producers, the aluminum producers. It's been tough across the country.
Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross made an interesting comment yesterday. He defended the tariffs. He says it's necessary to revive the steel and aluminum industries. But he said, and I'll see if I can get the quote here, when asked if the U.S. was in a trade war, Ross replied, as the president has often said, we've been at a trade war forever. The difference is that now our troops are coming to the ramparts.
You got his name wrong. His name is Wilbur. I forgot to divest from Chinese and Russian companies, Ross.
So you're
You're
not
analyze.
Taking the comments at face value then, Dan.
No, I would never do that. Not if it's coming from
phrase?
Him.
We have never been at war with East Eurasia. We've always been at war with East Eurasia. I mean, you know, this is Orwellian beyond. You know, I worked as part of my career in psychological operations, and this is worse than the book, than what's going on here. In one statement, he makes a political statement, Wilbur Ross, about war, trade war with China, which is just red meat bigotry and xenophobia for the base. Mm-hmm. And in the second, you know, part of it, they pull their punch back. The Chinese actually listen to their intelligence agencies and their economic intelligence people and their billionaires. And they are, remember, they're still a communist country. And when they listen to them, they understand what we're doing, and they know how to play them, which is why Ivanka Trump's licenses were authorized. They will always have something over on that family. They could break this White House if any of that private information about them were actually released by the government of China.
In the meantime, Wilbur Ross says the impact on small newspapers is minimal. The rural newspapers, don't worry about them. The rising newsprint costs aren't going to hurt. Not true.
What about the European and U.S. and many other governments who complain that China is out to get the technology? Malcolm, it's true.
They're commies. I mean, you know, they're communists.
What happened to ZTE? Government. What happened to that whole thing? Weren't we, finding them?
We were.
What was that? Well, can you talk about that plot line? Because I think that's kind of disappeared off.
ZTE was banned by the U.S. Department of Defense to have any of their Android-style phones on U.S. military facilities because we believe that they have an integrated intelligence collection operation using these platforms worldwide that are part of the Chinese government. We wouldn't make that statement if we did not have intelligence from the inside showing that they were collecting on these devices. Mm-hmm. The Department of Defense came out one way. Within 2 weeks, Donald Trump came out the other way and said, we're going to help bail out ZTE because China needs jobs. The problem with Trump is that whatever the last oligarch says to him, he repeats as if it's gospel.
But then you have the party falling in line, the party that said, this is not good. We want ZTE to be checked. And then they turn around and say, well, we can't undermine his ideas here because he's really trying to work something out with Korea. So now, all of a sudden, we're turning a blind eye over this like serious threat about technology and about the impact that it has on our country just because Donald Trump says to his party that he's using it as a negotiation.
Well, let me ask the panel this. Objectively, do you think, in fact, that trade has been imbalanced with China for a long time? The deal has been bad.
Trade is imbalanced with China, absolutely.
No, the deal. The deal, as Trump would call it. Is our deal a bad deal? Has it been a bad deal for decades?
Malcolm, maybe you can speak to it better than I. I mean, I would say that we are, of all the countries that are interacting with China, we have the highest GDP of any other nation.
Right.
So our economy is not as jeopardized.
But he's right. The deal was bad, which is why we entered into TPP and created that entire process, which would have given all of the trading partners in the Pacific Rim the ability to negotiate these tariffs, to have fixed tariffs, to stop them from doing intellectual property theft, from stop them from doing technology theft. Nope. All gone right now because it had the word China in it. And, you know, China understands this. They are working us. They are eating our technological lunch. Mm-hmm. We're trying to rebuild coal. China just closed its largest coal mine and created the world's largest solar field in its wake. We're trying to sell them sulfurous coal that China won't even buy. They won't even buy coal from Australia, which is closer. They're going into artificial intelligence. We're trying to give, 40,000 guys shovels so they can get black lungs.
Yeah, it's all
we are a century behind.
This is protectionism, immigration protectionism, and business protectionism. And it's not viewing reality. We have our heads stuck in the sand.
And it's not America first. It's America only.
Were it America first, the sanctions of ZTE would be kept in place.
Absolutely.
Well, this is an interesting... We'll see how it unfolds. The European Union will start taxing a range of imports tomorrow, including Harley Davidson's, cranberries, peanut butter, playing cards, whiskey, and the whiskey folks are getting a little nervous. Turkey imposing tariffs on nearly 24 U.S. products. I would say probably small potatoes on the grand scheme of things, but it amounts to about $267 million.
It's going to hurt poor people at the end of the day.
My favorite.
Because I think poor people buy a lot of Chinese products, and you might talk about whether they're superior or inferior, but the dollar stores might be going to $2 stores soon because of this kind of war. And I say that from a person who deals with a lot of people, poor people from the community, who actually even do their grocery shopping at some of these places.
Trump understands that, and he understands also that when Walmart's prices go up, the largest grocery chain and small chain, that's everything comes from China, right? Everything in Walmart comes from China. When the prices go up in that place, and he starts his Chinese anti-Chinese rhetoric, then it resonates. These people aren't thinking past the 10 cent. They're not thinking that the 10 cent rise in meat at Walmart is because of his big mouth. They're not thinking that way. They're thinking them Chinese, and they vote for their own,
And he's getting into a fight, right? A knife fight, or rather, he's bringing a knife to a gunfight because if Ping says to his people, we're changing the economy from soy to whatever other substance because we have to deal with these types of tariffs, they'll walk in lockstep and they'll go that way.
Oh, you know, one last story, Louise. China is buying Africa.
I mean, I've been
in sub-Saharan Africa. Whole nations are being turned into farms for China. China will not need our soy.
They will not.
I have a suspicion that you will suddenly see soy growth in Mexico, where they will just eliminate Iowa as far as they're concerned as a source, and they'll go to Canada or they'll find some other source, and they will hurt us on that point.
Which is why the decision to collaborate and embrace deals with other countries is beneficial. The move toward globalization has been considered a good one for many administrations, and it should remain a positive indicator. In my own classrooms, my best classes are the ones that have a diverse student body.
Right.
The students who come from all over the world. That's the best class you want to teach in.
Well, it's not globalization. We created globalization. America
right.
is globalization. When we sent the Great White Fleet around in the late 19th century, it announced our entry into the global market with guns, too. I mean, at the end of World War II, we created the 1950s and 60s buying and manufacturing boom because in World War II, we were dropping crates of everything American around the world. We are globalization. And I hear Donald Trump and his minions out there literally using it as a dirty word, abhorrent. He actually said that. He insulted someone and called him. I didn't know you were a globalist.
Heaven
this
forfend.
Is and proud of
trying
it.
To build
and
hotels all around the world. He's mm-hmm. so ignorant. He doesn't understand how it all works.
Okay, we'll need to take a quick break here. Malcolm Nance is here. Kalen Brown, Judy Patrick, and Dan Irizarry. It's the Roundtable panel. We have a stack of emails here, and I apologize. We haven't read too many of them. After the news break, we will get to a big pile of letters. We'll bounce them off the panel. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll be back.
The way you drive, honey, scares the hell out of me.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning. It's why are you laughing,
we
Judy?
We just can't stop talking.
Nope. They love talking. It's the Roundtable panel. It's 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. And Judy Patrick is here, Kalen Brown, Dan Irizarry, and Malcolm Nance here. Now, we got all these emails.
Yeah, let's
and we've it. Had such fun today. and I
You're going to ruin it.
I loosely
right?
call it fun, but we've been talking pretty well. And we haven't gotten to a lot of emails. So here we go, and I'll bounce these off you guys and see what you think. This one is from Janos. One of your panelists boasts about his past covert work for the intelligence services. Judy. What about the CIA coups and regime changes we've orchestrated in Latin America over the past 60 years? All the death and misery the banana republics have created only for the benefit of American corporations, or to use a better PC phrase, to mm-hmm. the benefit of national security interests.
Yeah, I agree. All that stuff happened. I mean, the Church Commission brought all of that out. The bad old days of the CIA. We didn't steal anybody's babies, okay? This is not like, we're not like the Argentinian junta. That were literally throwing people out of the airplane over the ocean and selling off their children. This is just ridiculous. This is now a fundamental discussion of values. Granted, the United States has a checkered history in many things, but we have never done anything as quite as stupid and as blatantly racist and xenophobic as this.
This one's from Dwight. Who wrote the law that Trump was enforcing regarding separation of children and parents?
Nobody. There is no law.
It was a policy, eh? Yes?
Yeah, he just made it up. He thunk it up and did it.
He did not thunk.
Okay.
This is from Casey in Rexford. Clarification of Trump's executive order. First, there's a difference between signing an order and that order being executed. Second, I think a closer reading will show there are many conditions under which families will be still split up. For example, the availability of beds. Last night, Jay Johnson stated, despite the dramatic increase in family facilities built under his tenure, there are few available for the regular migration flow. The story should be changed to reflect the real facts.
I think we need to take a close look at the shelters that are springing up as a result of this policy. There's a firm in the Southwest, I can't remember the name of it, that's like benefiting in terms of how they were just on the ropes financially about 2 years ago. And because of these policies, they are now worth close to $500 million. So I think we need to look at who's benefiting and if there's any connection, because we know that one thing this administration does well is spread the wealth to its friends and family.
And as a minor point, I remember when President Trump was campaigning, he made fun of the excessive use of executive orders, and he seems to be using them.
Quite a bit of them.
Quite frequently. Yeah.
Which last night, interestingly, there was a protest scheduled for the Leo W. O'Brien Federal Building downtown, mm-hmm. Where the same Political Action Committee I spoke of earlier was going to protest what was happening with families at the border. And after the executive order was signed, there was suggestion that the group should not have its protest, but they still had the protest. Intentionally, because they knew they had to remain vigilant. And I'll go back to just an observation Malcolm made before one of the breaks, which is ultimately people need to remember to vote in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bring someone who didn't vote in 2016.
And Malcolm, can you share your advice about riding a horse? No, on second thought.
I love riding horses.
This one is from Janice, who writes, is Stephen Miller actually the person calling the shots in this country? He whispers in Trump's ear, and his agenda seems to be Trump's agenda.
You know, he whispers in his ear, and then he won't let us listen to the audio recording he did with the New York Times. I'm very curious about why the White House was so against the New York Times using their audio of their interview with Stephen Miller in their daily podcast. We talked about it a little bit on the Daily, and then the Media Project. And certainly, there's ethical reasons why the New York Times didn't use it, but I was curious about that.
But the fact that the New York Times went to Stephen Miller in the first place to get the skinny on what was happening with this policy mm-hmm. speaks to the fact that indeed the 30-something, 32-year-old is very much swaying the administration's
choices. That sounds almost ageist.
I love 32-year-olds. Okay. I love all people.
I just want to interject something really personal. One of our board members of Capital District Latinos immigrated here when he was 7 years old from El Salvador. And he posted on Facebook something that I read about his own situation where he was separated at age 7 when he came with his parents. And he says there's not a day that goes by when he doesn't remember that experience. So people out there, this is a real thing. This is something that affects, that will affect the psyche of these children forever until they die, more than likely. So you got to get out there. You got to call your representatives, and you got to, if you think that this is something heinous, you need to call them and let them know.
Go ahead, Mel.
One thing on Steve Miller's, he grew up in California in Santa Monica, if I'm not mistaken, and he was like this in high school.
Yes, he was.
People that knew him, he was just an open sexist and a bigot, and he has become a Trump whisperer because he knows the boss likes to hear this stuff. But General Kelly helped draft this policy a year ago, mm-hmm. as did Secretary Nielsen and all the rest of them. So it's a team effort in being this mean.
This one is from Melanie, who is a professor of Spanish at Bard College. I thank Malcolm Nance for bringing up the question of why people from Central American countries are arriving in droves at our borders. We in the U.S. like to believe that these countries and their political systems exist in a vacuum, unrelated to our own history of our own foreign policies. There is a dangerous ignorance here that most of us share, and that is from Melanie. This one is from Larry, who writes, the immigration flow has to be stopped at the source, and by boosting their economic situations, it can be minimized. Maybe if El Salvador and Nicaragua or other Central American countries said they were collectively creating nuclear weapons programs, the president would halt it by promising economic assistance. This one is from Mike. The reason I say foreign terrorist in the subject heading, which he did, he said future foreign terrorist, the reason I say that is because this country has its own terrorist groups, such as those various alt-right groups that target people due to their color, religion, and/or sexual preference. Do you think that the way Trump and his administration, by separating children from their families and traumatizing these youth in their formative year, has sown the seeds for future foreign terrorists that will be on our borders? And that's from Mike. Anybody?
A lot to unpack. I don't think you have time.
Well, you got a minute. You want to go? Yeah.
No, that's all right. I'll pass.
Okay.
I'll
let you checked out already, didn't you, Dan? You had enough? All right. Well, we're almost done.
You know, it's certainly possible. And obviously, when you treat people so horribly, they're going to have a bad taste in their mouth. Let's hope that we remedy this fairly soon and that the care that these children are getting while they're in custody is nurturing and supportive. I'm not sure that that's happening.
Let's look at the geopolitics of the 1950s and 60s when we were trying to force governments to be like us and democratic, which caused a whole series of wars, lots and lots of terrorism, led essentially to 9/11. What we're looking at is a backlash from 9/11, not the people coming across the borders, but how we're treating people that are coming to this country. A long time ago, I said that I'd like to write a book called Bin Laden Laughs from His Grave. I've been to his house in Jalalabad, Afghanistan.
And, while he was there?
I was trying to get him. He's a little slippery. But I got his Quran stand. But all of that being said, the things we do have consequences. There is such a thing as blowback. And this may not create terrorists, but it could create governments hostile to us in the future, which could harm our economy and hurt our citizens.
You know what really burns me up about in this discussion about immigration is how the right, the religious right, is couching this, or some people in the religious right, and Jeff Sessions' use of the Bible, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders confirming what he said and couching this. I mean, I don't know what Bible they're reading, but it's not the one that I was brought up reading. Because the one that I was brought up reading talks about the stranger And it talks about treating the least among us. And it talks about caring for the sick and the infirm and the outcast. And I think people out there who go to church should raise this at their congregation level and say, we need to talk about how the Bible is being taken away from us and used as in the way that it was during slavery.
Apparently, Jeff Sessions' church did so. The Methodist, the United Methodist Church came out and condemned him for that.
That's true.
This is our panel today on the roundtable: Judy Patrick, Kalen Brown, Dan Irizarry, and Malcolm Nance. And we are wrapping up our hour and a half almost by going through a stack of emails here at panel@wamc.org. This one is from Daniel, subject heading immigrants. There's no problem with immigrants. It's the land of opportunity for legal immigrants. This country will be much better off when we get rid of political parties and stop wasting time fighting with each other and start focusing on the future. Anybody?
I completely agree with that caller or that writer. I think that too much time is being spent divisive language concerning us and them. It's not an us and them situation. We are all part of the human condition. We are all human beings who should be trying to work together. And it might sound simplistic, but to me, it's the reason that we're failing, because we're not recognizing each other. And any one of us could be in the same position.
Amen.
This one is from another Alan, who writes, thank you, Malcolm. All right, we'll read
You're welcome.
Malcolm, I've been shouting from the rooftops for 2 years. This is not about red versus blue. Thank you for articulating this so well. Can't wait for the new book. All right, did you know that person? Possibly. This one is
chart talk.
This one's from Kevin, who writes, go Malcolm. Oh, okay, here we go. You have Trump's agenda nailed, probably better than he does. And we see Ryan rising on the horizon for a 2020 run, just like Alan says.
I'm better organized.
Than Alan? All right, and this one is from Thomas. Questions from, it's the Malcolm show now.
Right, he's sitting in the chair.
We can leave now, right?
Questions for Malcolm. Good morning, esteemed panel. Two questions for Malcolm Nance. Are you still registered as a Republican? One.
Nope.
Also, since you have written a book, you've written the book Plot to Hack America, has the special counsel investigation contacted you for any advice or information?
No, they don't have to, because they came to the same conclusions. However, the entire DNC got a copy right after their hacking.
This one is from Tom, and he writes, while I appreciate your discussion on Trump's heartless political maneuvering at the Mexican border, you fail to mention the worst of this crisis, which is the sexual assault and forced drugging of these small children. That's according, I guess, to the Center for Investigative Reporting, so saith Tom.
I haven't heard anything about that.
Mm.
I don't know.
We want to be careful about that.
Yes, we do.
There's not been any real reporting that I've seen.
Exactly. This is from Kathleen. A common sense fix for the main sticking point on immigration would be to help economically and in other ways not hurt Latin American and South American countries so that people who live in those countries have no need to leave. And let's see here. What's a good stack? This one is from Mike in Clifton Park. China and U.S. Treasuries. Aren't we vulnerable to Chinese manipulation of the market as retaliation, especially in light of the growing deficit? Can't they shift some of those safe haven resources to European bonds?
They could. China, we borrowed Chinese.
They own us.
We borrowed a lot of money during the Bush years by selling bonds to the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And they could make things interesting for us if it was in their interest. And you're right, they could safe haven money into the euro. Same thing with the Middle East, which we won't, because the Saudis now love Donald Trump because they know that they can buy him with lavishness. But for a long time, they were talking about shifting the oil reserve currency from the dollar to the euro.
Hold on to your 401k, baby.
Can I back up to that reference to the Center for Investigative Reporting, which is now calling itself Reveal, which I didn't know. Taxpayers have paid more than $1.5 billion in the past 4 years to private companies operating immigrant youth shelters accused of serious lapses in care, including neglect and sexual and physical abuse, a Reveal investigation has found. So that's legitimate.
Okay.
If it's coming from the Center for Investigative Reporting, that would be legitimate.
Okay. Well, thank you for following. What did you bring a laptop with you?
You bet.
You see me? I got a stack of papers here. It's very old school.
Until there's a chip in my brain.
But getting back to Malcolm's point, the U.S. clearly has some leverage here. We are the biggest consumer, are we not?
Yeah, we are.
So China would have to tread somewhat lightly.
Nope, because they know American consumers, how American consumers consume. and that's voraciously and cheaply. And the best thing that, I mean, if they wanted to do anything, they could order, you know, more inspections at their factories and start charging Walmart a lot more for products and make it painful on the American consumer. Look, there's no other manufacturing base in this world now like China. And we have, and that was the decision of U.S. corporations to shift all of their manufacturing to Asia because they could do it for 50 cents an hour. So there's no coming back from that. And so long as we keep consuming all these little trinkets and things that come from over there, they have us by a nose ring.
I think that the day that they decide to pull all those licensing deals that they have with Ivanka, that might be when we see a change in the policy.
But did the U.S. not ramp up industrial and commercial production massively leading up to World War II? I mean, it can be done.
Yeah, it takes a war.
Is a trade war not a war?
A world war. No, that was a shooting war. And back then, but it was from an age of mechanization, an age where little things had to be put together by hand. Robot automation.
And it took years, and there were a lot of sacrifices that had to be made. Other things had to be given up when you...
Right.
Refrigerators for tanks.
And not just the corporations making the decision. The decision, I'd like to point out, was made because of corporate greed. The profit margin wasn't big enough. That's why the manufacturing went over to China.
Yeah, right. Ask Mitt Romney, right? Closed factories in the United States, moved everything to China, and now are complaining that China is producing things and have a deficit with us. It's ridiculous.
And what do they do to incentivize our corporations? I'm sorry, Dan.
No, go ahead. I think China has a plan B, and we don't have a plan, period.
We don't have a plan at all. They're going for the future. We're going for the 1940s, 30s.
Yep.
And this one is from Anna, and Anna writes, "Thank you always for bringing thoughtful conversation to the roundtable. I must point out, as a native Argentinian, that the comparison with the Argentinian junta is an unhappy one, as most of the military leaders engaged in such exercises were trained by U.S. School of the Americas. I appreciate all of the fairness on these observations. Thank you always. Panel is my favorite radio show."
He's right. A lot of horrible things were done in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, and in the name of spreading democracy. We've gotten a little smarter, I thought, and now we are in a completely different world. We are aligning ourselves with... We've moved ourselves away from NATO and the Atlantic Alliance. We're now aligning ourselves with the world's worst dictators. And the United States is the newest member of this axis of autocracy, I call it.
Axis of bullies, right. Yeah, that's what it is, a new axis. Yeah.
All right, so we have one minute left. I want everyone on the panel to say something positive. Malcolm, you go first.
It's sunny outside. Go water your plants.
That's
go
not
take
too
a
good,
walk.
Man. That's all right.
Turn television off.
You're on television. What are you talking about?
Not today. It's all lawyers and babies today.
All right, man.
I want to ask Malcolm if he knows anything about whether or not Trump will take his shirt off when he summits with Putin.
Oh, my God. That will just
Did
be
you imagine that?
Horrible.
That was
the,
not
the
positive. That was far from positive, Dan. Thank you very much.
What I would like to say positively is how easy it is to register to vote. It is so simple and takes very little time, and people should register to vote.
The 26th. Caleb Brown, well done. That was positive.
Don't forget, the 26th is the primary, Democratic primary.
I'll say today's the summer solstice, longest day of the year, my favorite day of the year. We'll have light until 9 o'clock.
Judy, let's you and me go to Stonehenge and have a couple of cocktails. We're done here. Thank you very much, everybody. Thanks, Malcolm and Judy and Kaylin and Dan for being here. Thanks, everybody, for writing in. There's a lot more roundtable ahead. Stand by.